This morning we sang, "Let nothing evil pass this door. May the roar and rain go by." Contrast that to Rumi's guidance to welcome and be grateful for all arrivals, even a crowd of sorrows, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Both of these sentiments, though seemingly contradictory, are alive and well in me, and I don't think I'm alone in this congregation. I desire safety, comfort, the familiar, nothing but peaceful loving kindness, and I also long for challenges that bring growth and that may require some pain, suffering, and friction that the other part of me would just reject. These challenges could be anything from my own feelings and parts of myself that I do not like to other individuals or categories of people, whole groups of people. My peaceful equilibrium may be threatened from within or from without. The other, often with other capitalized, calls to mind not only difference, unfamiliarity, but also something dangerous, perhaps monstrous, destructive of whatever we deem human. It's the title of a horror movie about twins, one of whom, of course, is evil. And if you like that movie, Amazon.com suggests that you purchase Psycho. So the stranger as the other might be the devil or someone doing the devil's work, a threat, likely in disguise. Death often appears as a visiting stranger in folklore. No wonder that in our myth, 1,000 doors were locked to Jupiter and Mercury. We also lock doors, sometimes even to people close to us. Sometimes to people who differ from us or we don't understand. You know, the jerks, the idiots, the other names we might want to call them. You know what I'm talking about? Sometimes the unexpected or the unwanted, like a serious illness, may intrude in our daily lives. Denial may keep it at bay for a while. And sometimes we lock our doors to our own longings. There's probably one sneaking up on you someplace that you kind of put away. Even with the challenges I want when they come, I often first avoid, ignore, minimize, that's a good one for me, bury, or otherwise lock myself away from feeling anything that might disturb my equilibrium. 3 weeks ago, Robin talked about how brain scans provide evidence that we make decisions before we are even conscious of them. We imagine we've chosen, but the decision's already been made. Our actual reasons to lock the door when something intrudes, or that we've even locked it, may remain unconscious. Our myths record this very human tendency. I've also had the feeling of being locked out. I imagine that we all have. And I've lived to regret locking out someone and also parts of myself that I've kept a lid on that I later wished I hadn't. Psychologists tell us that we often reject in others the qualities that we unconsciously reject in ourselves. We imagine that we are not like them, and we project our rejected qualities onto them. This morning I had the experience of forgetting my sermon at home. I had to have somebody bring it. I loved Lily. Those of you who know me how much I loved Lily. Well, one of the things that she had often done was forget her sermon at home. And I would say, that dits. How could she be so disorganized? Oh, well. Well. Now, we can also turn those we reject into the big capital O others, you know. And given our unconscious projection, it's hard to know the origin of the threat we are keeping at bay when we other one another. In liberal U.S. circles, for example, it's almost commonplace to wonder whether an adamant homophobe is actually a homosexual. More often, the process is more subtle. I look at someone new in coffee hour, and I question whether she will like me. Then I have to ask myself, might it be true that I'm really questioning whether I'm going to like her? Or maybe whether I'm good enough to be liked? Is it my habit of mind to believe that we're going to click and grow together? Or is it my habit of mind to believe that we would not? How open am I really to community and to the differences within it? The evidence is in whether I approach or avoid others, how deeply I try to get to know them, how readily I retreat to surface talk. In ancient myths, in folk and fairy tales, and today in movies and books, the stranger may also be a positive. Rather than the devils of our imagination, the mythological strangers may be gods, angels, something of the divine. Both Rumi and our myth speak to this aspect of otherness. They say, take another look. Open deeply. Develop compassion, hospitality. Discover that something wonderful may exist regardless of our initial assessment. We are everyone in this myth. We're the strangers who slam the door shut, and we're the Bosis and Philemon welcoming them in. Even our own projections may be gifts helping us become more conscious of what we fail to see in ourselves. St. Francis wrote, "Can true humility and compassion exist in our words and eyes unless we know that we too are capable of any act?" Accepting the stranger, the other, the intruder, which in Rumi's poem seems to be our own feelings and personal woes, offers an opportunity for growth, refreshment, regeneration, transformation. Thus, Bosis and Philemon show us a more hopeful aspect of our humanity. I also believe that religion at its best, and particularly spiritual practices like loving kindness and meta-meditation, help develop this part of us. TPC social justice work, such as that about immigration and Israeli-Palestine issues, also the small group ministry project, serve in this vein, as long as we don't demonize those on the opposite side of our issues, like, you know, maybe the immigration officers. If we created for ourselves a daily practice to more consistently follow any single one of our UU principles, we would begin to diminish our othering of one another. Scientists are discovering that meditation can just deepen those pathways in the brain that encourage compassionate responses. Brain studies show that practicing new behaviors, just like practicing the piano, can change pathways. Practicing might help us invite and welcome what we would otherwise reject and lock out of our lives. We begin to tune our hearts and minds to listen for the divine and not only the devil in one another, to choose relationship rather than othering. And that includes compassion towards ourselves, being in relationship with all that's in us, the disowned parts of who we are as well, choosing to listen for the divine in ourselves as well as in others. Thus, Rumi is way ahead of his time in calling on us to live in a practice of gratitude for what comes, that including that which hurts deeply. Male and female, like master and servant, have functioned as archetypes of the other and all of the opposing qualities of life, with marriage representing the archetypal union of opposites. And the marriage of Bosis and Philemon is the archetypal, long, happy, loving one in which otherness has already been mitigated. They've grown old together and were told that The one commanding was the one who obeyed. As represented by their poverty in this myth, the couple is humble and have stripped away any attachment they had to any of the inessentials of life. They are not engaged in a battle of egos with one another or to be something other than what life asks of them. Finally, they are well practiced in this way of being. All this prepares them to welcome the strangers. I see them as a humanized version of the yin-yang symbol. Otherness is transformed by the way in which the parts are balanced and joined in relationship. In the yin-yang symbol, this is shown abstractly in the intersecting central curve where the dark and light meet, and in the dark dots of dark and light in the opposite side. Our couple, as with the dark and light of the yin and yang, are symbolic of us as individuals, with psyches comprising dark and light, masculine and feminine, master and servant, and also symbolic of the nature of humanity as a whole and of the larger processes or ways of being in the universe as they move towards balance, harmony, integration, and in and out of that process. Usually in stories and myths, something is amiss. The unfolding story describes either its destruction or its renewal into something right. The ending may be cautionary or happy. As in this myth, sometimes we have both. Everyone but Baucis and Philemon is inhospitable to strangers. In the ancient world where shelter and water could mean life or death, turning away a stranger was one of the worst possible transgressions. It might, in effect, be murder. Othering still, maybe. Witness the North Carolina woman who thought that the black man from Florida who banged on her door after being in an accident was a dangerous intruder. The responding police killed him. The myth says, yes, beware. Don't be stupid, but yes, don't assume demons. And in addition, do what serves. From the myth's context, we know that the gods are already suspicious about the inhabitants of this place. Their visit may be to give the inhabitants one last chance before meting out punishment. On the other hand, our loving couple already appears to be in the happily ever after stage before this myth starts. Yes, they are poor, but they are together and content. They do get a fabulous reward at the end of the story, but they also lose all their neighbors and the homeland where they've been. And they never ask these gods to visit them. So why would something that's already in a state of balance, relationship, need to open to transformation along with its inevitable loss, its heavy costs? Partly because it can't be helped. Change is the constant. The stranger will come, and that is true in all of our lives. Baucis and Philemon lose their equilibrium when they realize that they are in the presence of the divine. We too may, when something, perhaps it's that sunset, brings us to a state of awe. We may lose it when we engage with what we most value in life and wonder, as our couple does, whether we're doing enough, say perhaps on behalf of our own families. In the face of the divine, Baucis and Philemon are even willing to sacrifice their goose, their warning system, and also their last available resource. But the goose seeks Jupiter's and Mercury's protection and is saved. I find this a bit of a warning. We can go too far or make wrong choices about what we would sacrifice to honor the divine or whatever we most value in our lives. Whatever it is that we worship, and the implication in this story is rightly worship, not falsely worship, we can go too far in sacrificing for that. Compassion, relationship, worship, they require wisdom and attention to any little alarms that may suggest that we've gone off in the wrong direction. But to me, this myth also says that we will be blessed in ways we cannot anticipate when we open to spirit, to source, the source that I believe connects us all, when we open to the divine in its many forms. We will also be blessed when we give what we most value its due, rather than settling for less in our lives. Resource arrives if we allow it. Hospitality to the unbidden strangers rewards our couple with a kind of life of service they desire. These letting in the spirit or opening our eyes to what we most value, these support our desire to serve even in old age when we may feel relegated to the fringe of society. And then there is the incredibly beautiful image of their deaths, which brings me to tears. In addition to neither having to bury the other, Philemon and Baucis transform at the same moment into an oak and a linden tree. Trees generally, and these specific species, are symbolically rich, including notions of love and life perpetually renewing themselves. We could speak about this for another hour, and we won't. My tears were because, of course, I don't want to bury Marianne, nor she me. How I read the ending past the tears is that I have to keep my guest house door open to what may come. And I need to do that so that I may die not regretting how I've lived. I have to keep practicing opening and ferreting out how I lock the door so that I open even more while not sacrificing the goose. That's how I will create a legacy, the tree that will grow after me. And I need to do this in relationship with Marianne, my family and friends, my larger community. I want my neighbors with me. I don't ask for too much, just everything. So I thank you for embracing me in this community and for all you do embracing one another. And I especially thank any newcomers who are here today for the life they bring us, for the trees they may be planting here, the little seedlings. May we each and as a community keep cracking our doors open a little more and just a little more.